become epidemic proportions. And doctors and social scientists and people scratching their head and saying, you know, why do we have so much breast cancer going around? Let's try to figure out the reason. Well, this brochure mentions some 26 studies that confirm that there is a link between abortion and breast cancer. Now, this information needs to get out to the public. There are scientific reasons for why this may be the case. Pregnancy, first pregnancy, introduces changes in the cells of the breast, and it requires the full completion of the pregnancy for those changes, getting ready for lactation of the child, to become complete. If you interrupt the pregnancy, what happens? The changes that are taking place in the cell tissue also are interrupted. And so the cells are left in kind of a precarious state, which apparently makes them more susceptible to turning into cancerous cells. The interruption of a first pregnancy especially increases the risk of this disease. This does not mean, some people misunderstand this, this does not mean that the only cause of breast cancer is abortion. That's silly. Of course, many women get breast cancer, have never had an abortion in their life, and never would. So I mean, people should, this should not make people who have breast cancer feel guilty. That's not what's being said. What's being said is if you abort a pregnancy, you have an increased risk of this disease. And so I encourage you to get in touch with this kind of information. And again, out of concern for women in our society, to let this information be known. Okay, there are all kinds of physical complications and possible complications. In fact, there are over 100 of them, so we could spend all day talking about the physical dangers of abortion. But let's move on to another area, the psychological, the emotional. I have a friend who had an abortion about 12 years ago. She was talking to me about it and gave me permission to share her story. She was saying how she suffers from this. And I said, well, how do you suffer? She said, well, one thing is I have nightmares. I said, tell me about the nightmares. She says, I'm in a cafeteria and somebody is rolling by one of those carts, you know, that has two shelves on it. On the bottom shelf I see the body of a baby all torn apart. And as it's rolled by me, the baby sits up and looks at me and points his finger and says, see what you did, see what you did? And I start screaming and I wake up in the middle of the night. So I said, that's a horrible nightmare. I said, how often do you have it? And she said to me, 2 or 3 times a week. And she had the abortion 12 years ago. I said, the suffering. And she never talks about it to anybody. She can't. Too painful. How many women are suffering in silence? The results psychologically from abortion are many. Grief, mourning, destroyed self-esteem, confusion, self-destructive behavior, crisis of identity. The woman has to begin asking herself, you know, who am I? That I was capable of doing such a terrible thing. I'm not the loving and caring person that I thought I was. How did I do such a terrible deed? And by the way, these kinds of thoughts leading her to think, well, I'm certainly not fit to be a mother if I had my child destroyed. These kinds of thoughts will often lead to further abortions, won't they? Because if she's come to the conclusion after having her child destroyed that she's not fit to be a mother, well then if she gets pregnant again, that same thought comes back, I'm not fit to be a mother, what's the solution? Abort the child. One abortion leads to another. And almost half of the abortions that are taking place now in the country are repeat abortions. Women get caught in this terrible cycle of self-destruction. Now, you may have heard of post-abortion syndrome. Let me give you a little bit of an idea of what's going on here. The reactions after abortion vary from woman to woman. And there is still a lot of research to be done on the psychological after effects of this procedure. I have here, these are not all the studies that have been done, there have been many, but here is just a brief summary of 57 of them, major psychological studies on the after effects of abortion. It's been done for years. Some people talk about the, by the way, you may hear some people talk about the report that was given by the former Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop, to President Reagan about the psychological after effects of abortion. And some of the pro-abortion people will bring this up to you, and they'll say, well, when the Surgeon General reported to the President some years ago, he said that there were no psychological after effects of abortion. That's not what the report said. The report said that there wasn't sufficient research completed to show one way or the other what the effects are. That's not the same as saying there are no effects. He knew very well that there are effects. So do the women who are suffering from them, and so do people who work all the time with women who've had abortions. Obviously there are effects. More research needs to be done. You may talk to some psychologist who will say, oh, well, this post-abortion grief and so forth, this is just a myth, you know, and I have studies to prove it. The problem is, realize this, that a lot of the studies that have been done on the psychological results of abortion are flawed in the manner in which they were conducted. Now, what do we mean by this? It's easy to understand. A lot of these studies talked to the women in the period of several months or a year or maybe 2 years after they had their abortion. Well, what do you think is the initial psychological reaction of a lot of women who've had abortions? Relief. I solved my problem. I don't have to worry about how I'm going to care for this child. I don't have to worry about losing my boyfriend. I don't have to worry about getting kicked out of the house. I'm back to the way I was before. Relief. And so the studies, some of them said, well, you know, the major effect is good. It's relief. But what happens if you follow the woman 7 or 10 years after her abortion? Then you begin to see a different picture. And this is where a lot of these studies are flawed. They didn't follow the woman long enough. Some 7 to 10 years after the abortion, normally, she begins to break out of the denial. Maybe something happens in her life or in the life of someone close to her that hits her between the eyes and says, what did I do? For example, it might be the birth of a niece or a nephew. It might be a subsequent child that she herself has. It might be a thought, you know, at Christmas time, oh, gee, I would have been, you know, wrapping presents and giving them to my baby. It may be thinking, gee, this was the day the child would have been born. He would have been starting school now. You know, a thousand different thoughts can come into the, can and do come into the woman's mind. And at some point or another down the line, she will be at a point where she breaks through the denial and faces the reality of what has happened. In order to get the abortion, she has to have some kind of a mental disconnection with the child. You know, how is a woman going to go in and have her child aborted? Well, what she's got to do in some way is to say to herself and to say to the baby, you are not a baby, or you are not my baby, or somehow or another, I do not have responsibility right now to preserve your life. And so there's some sort of a distortion or a denial in her own mind about what she's about to do. Can that denial last forever? It cannot. And this is where post-abortion grief comes into the picture. Now, it's a varying degrees. I'm going to explain what it is. But she will either have some kind of grief or what's called post-abortion distress, or it will last longer and be more severe and be called post-abortion syndrome. And in some cases, it can be so severe that it requires psychiatric treatment and even hospitalization, and that's where we're dealing with something that's called post-abortion psychosis. But there's a spectrum. But on one level or another, what's happening? She's grieving. She knows on some level of her personality she has lost her own child. Now, that's a cause of grief for a mother, no matter how young or old the child is. So she's grieving. But what's happening? Society is telling her, don't grieve. After all, this is a right. This is a choice. This is something that solves your problems. Nothing to worry about. Safe, simple procedure. No problem. Go in on your lunch hour, get the abortion, you can be back to work the same afternoon. No big deal. So society is telling her no big deal, but then when she feels the emotional pain, when the grief is happening inside of her that she lost her own child, what is she going to feel? She's going to feel either stupid or crazy for doing something that's very natural and right, grieving her own child. And because she feels stupid and crazy, and because this abortion was all such a private thing that she doesn't talk to anybody about, what happens? She grieves in silence. And there's nobody to whom she can properly express that grief and work it through. And psychologists call this impacted grief. In other words, the grief fosters and festers inside of her like an infection. And unless it's dealt with, it can destroy her personality. In post-abortion syndrome, for example, one of the characteristics that's manifested is avoidance. She will back away from anything that in any way reminds her of the abortion. Will often not want to hear about abortion. If she got a suction abortion, sometimes such women will tremble and will become afraid when they hear a vacuum cleaner because the sound, the noise reminds them of the abortion procedure. Another characteristic, a general characteristic of this post-abortion syndrome is intrusive flashbacks and recollections of the abortion experience. They may come in the form of dreams. They may come in the middle of the day at unexpected times. She finds herself crying for no reason or suddenly feels as though she's back in that situation and becomes very much afraid. Another thing that it does it can destroy some of the very warm, affectional life that she otherwise might have. Abortion, in the case of some women, makes them draw back from intimacy with men. It makes them draw back from sexual intimacy. Why? Because somewhere on the levels of their emotions in their mind, they realize this is how that very unpleasant experience started. Now, there's no reason to back away, but she becomes, you know, emotionally frozen very often. These are just some of the terrible effects that psychologically can happen. And so what has to be done for the healing of such people? They have to be helped to face, first of all, the truth of what occurred, to be helped to break out of the denial and to admit, look, what I'm grieving here is the death of my own child, and I am at least partially responsible for that. To face up to that truth, and then to know what? That forgiveness and healing and peace are available. They are available. They are available from the church and from God and from those who are able to help her work through this grief. She needs to face that. She needs to ask forgiveness. And believe me, there's few greater joys that we as priests have than to be able to forgive such women for abortion. It's such a joy to welcome a woman in and to hear her talk about what happened and then to say, I absolve you of your sins. The doors of the church are open. Let this be known. Spread this around to everyone and anyone you know. We do not reject these women. The doors of the church are open. We want them to come back, and they can find peace with God, peace with the church, peace with themselves, and peace with their unborn children. Whether they have had one or two or five or ten, I even know of a woman who had 22 abortions. Can you imagine? Now, can there be peace for her? Can there be healing? Can there be forgiveness? Absolutely. Not only can there be forgiveness, but she can become a saint. Here's the power of the gospel. Here's the power of what Jesus Christ did when he died and rose for us and established the church. Brothers and sisters, this is possible. We have to let this be known. A lot of women stay away. They don't want to come. They're afraid of what they're going to hear. No need to fear. Now, the thing about it is, once forgiveness is given, that's not the end of the story. She has to reestablish the bond with the child. If she wants to get full healing, she needs to undo what she did before the abortion, when she said, "You are not my child, I am not responsible for you, it's okay if I have you killed." That psychological process has to go into reverse, and she has to reestablish the bond. Now, there are various counseling methods that are used and various post-abortion support groups and projects that are available to her to work through this. For example, I'm sure you're familiar with Project Rachel. Okay, the woman can go and speak with the priest or a sister or somebody who is trained in these kind of things, and by means of a number of sessions, find peace again with the unborn child. In a lot of places, special masses of healing are offered. I know back in New York, where I'm from, we have masses called At Peace with the Unborn, and women are invited to come to these masses, and opportunity is offered for confession and for healing. There is a national office of post-abortion reconciliation and healing, and on these yellow forms there is the phone number of this office, where help can be, advice can be obtained, and women can be put in touch with people who can help them. The number is 414-483-4141. Let's talk about, finally, another slant on this, and then some concluding remarks, and that is pro-life feminism. There is an authentic feminism. We know that there's radical feminism. We know that there's distorted and crazy kind of feminism, which is really not feminism at all. It's women wanting to be men. That's what it is. It is not real feminism. But there is an authentic feminism, a Christian feminism. And what is it? It's very simple. Upholding and recognizing the dignity of women as God made them. And how did God make them? Equal to men. It's the teaching of the church. Women and men have equal dignity, equal value to their lives, equal call to holiness and to the kingdom of God. Don't let a reaction against the distortions of radical feminism make you forget that there is an authentic feminism. And authentic feminism is pro-life. Do you know that the founders of the feminist movement in the United States were pro-life? They abhorred abortion. And today we have a group in the country called Feminists for Life. I love talking with them. I interact all the time with pro-life groups and leaders throughout the nation. And when I read what the Feminists for Life are saying and how they're reasoning this thing through, it's one of my favorite approaches to the problem of abortion. For example, they will argue this way. Feminists rightfully reject the notion that the value of women is determined by whether or not men want them. So then why do they do the same thing to their children and say that the value of the child in the womb depends on whether or not the mother wants the child? Women rightfully reject being exploited because they are, quote-unquote, the weaker sex, and so being dominated by those who are more powerful. Feminism rejects that. So then why do these so-called feminists reject the child who is weaker and smaller and less powerful and is dominated by the strong? The same things that authentic feminism rejects are being foisted upon babies in the womb in the name of feminism. This is a contradiction. This is wrong. And if we're going to promote authentic feminism, what we need to say is the value, the privilege, the dignity that women have been given, their unique power to bear a child within themselves, is not something that should be snuffed out. And they do not need surgical instruments and suction tubes and Roe v. Wade decisions and face laws and all this other nonsense in order to be equal to the rest of people in society. They are already equal. Being equal does not mean being the same. Being equal means recognizing what is so special about women and making room for it in society. Making room for it. Abortion says, we don't have room for you. We don't have the resources in this society, even if you get pregnant in an unplanned way. Oh, we don't have the resources to really, make room for you and your child and to help you to nurture that child. No, we'll solve your problem. We'll just do away with the child. See how this exploits what is so such a gift and privilege that women have. Instead of making room for that, celebrating that, extolling that, it eliminates it, it snuffs it out. People don't come together and form support groups to help one another because they had their tonsils removed. They don't band together and get into counseling because their appendix was taken out. But women who've had abortions do band together and come together to find support and to rise up and to say, no, this is wrong. This is bad for us. This is not feminist. And we have today the National Women's Coalition for Life. You may be familiar with this. Let me read some of the groups that belong to this national coalition, all women's groups. American Victims of Abortion, Capitol Hill Women for Life, Concerned Women for America, Feminists for Life, Fortress International, International Black Women's Network, National Council of Catholic Women, Victims of Choice, Women Affirming Life, Women Exploited by Abortion, Women for Faith and Family. These and various other organizations have come together into a pro-life coalition and are one of the most beautiful voices now calling for an end to abortion. And there are studies continuing to be done on what I was saying before about the after effects of abortion. And one of the best places to get ongoing information about that is, by the way, let me give you there's a phone number for this National Coalition for, National Women's Coalition for Life. It's based in Alexandria, Virginia, 703-960-4519. There's another association called the Elliott Institute. And this institute in Springfield, Illinois, P.O. Box 9079, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. They do ongoing research into the effects of abortion, and they even publish a newsletter called the Post-Abortion Review. Very, very good thing to get a hold of and to circulate among women's groups, because it's up-to-the-minute information on all of these things that I've been talking about. And Mr. David Reardon, who heads the Institute, also has a book called Aborted Women, Silent No More. It's one of many books that outline the harmful effects on women. Now, there's another angle on all of this, and this is one of the ways that hopefully we'll be able to bring abortions to an end in our country, and that is assisting women who have been harmed by abortion to do what? What do you think they should do to the abortionist who didn't tell them what the negative after effects would be? Sue them. Sue them. Forgive them, yes, but sue them. Call them to account, right? Because you know what? Abortion may be legal, but malpractice is not. And these people are guilty of more malpractice than anybody has ever heard. There are actually groups available to women who have been harmed by abortion to be able to get their rights restored. And there, for example, a group called Legal Action for Women. They have an 800 number. You ready for this one? 1-800-YOU-CAN-SUE. There's another group called the American Rights Coalition, 1-800-634-2224. But groups like this are helping women across the country to say, look, this is not right. I've been harmed physically, emotionally. I want to take these people to task and make sure that this doesn't happen to other women. You know, these abortionists don't have to pay malpractice insurance. One of the things that they're most afraid of, I'm going to tell you, I got this from inside sources, the abortion industry is very afraid of being forced to pay malpractice insurance. Boy, if we can get laws requiring them to do that, you know, we would really be ahead of the game here. And, you know, as well as threatening losses. Let it be known that women of our country are not going to continue to tolerate being exploited. And you know what? This is what makes abortion a concern of all of us. Because even if we're not in childbearing years, if you are a woman, to stand up for other women in this country and to say no to the ongoing exploitation, this is your concern. And it's our concern, too, as men. For goodness sake, sometimes some people say to me, oh, why are you talking about this? You're a man. Oh, yeah, I'm a human being, too. And this is the destruction of my fellow human beings. Of course we have a right to speak up about this. Not only that, but we all used to be babies in the womb. You know, and that gives us a right to speak up about it, too. But there's nothing more basic. There's no problem more urgent. And there's no way right now in the history of the church and the world that you can be more a part of history than by getting actively involved in this movement. This is the time when we can make history. The day will come when people will look back and they will say, first of all, how did our nation take such a wrong turn? A nation that people pledged their allegiance to by saying liberty and justice for all. It's not for all. It's especially not for those who are in the first 9 months of life. How did the nation take such a wrong turn? But then history will ask another question. Where were the people who knew that this was wrong? What did they say? What did they do? Wouldn't you be proud to be in the history books? If you read back about the days of slavery, wouldn't you be proud to be among those who spoke up against it and even rescued, you know, slaves and set them free? Wouldn't you be proud if you lived in the time of Nazi Germany and you knew that people were being led away to the gas chambers and you rescued them and you stood up and you said, no, this must stop. Even if you couldn't change it, at least that you spoke up, that you let your voice be heard, that you let it be known, you will not tolerate this evil. We are in one of those situations right now. Let's not lose the opportunity. Let's speak up for the babies and for the mothers. And let's bring an end to this evil once and for all. God bless you and thank you.